Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh and I am joined by John.
Hello.
And we are going to finally address the widely requested Contemplations episode on prepping. Mm-hmm. I'm also going to cover a bit of survivalism as well, because I feel like the two are inseparable from one another, and it's something that is pretty dear to my heart, because I've brought some stuff from home to show what I'm going to be talking about as well.
Including that awful shirt. That's not a fashion statement, by the way.
Yeah, I've not traded my white shirts for this, just for fun.
It was down at a Russian army surplus recently, and there we go.
No, it's just one that I take camping. That's the idea. But, you know, I thought if I'm going to cover it, I may as well do it right.
Mm-hmm. It took us a while because we had to prepare for this podcast extensively.
Yeah, we did. I did lots and lots of prepping for this. Years of prepping, really. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what is prepping? What is survivalism? So I'm going to just look at a basic Oxford definition, because I think it's good enough. It just says, the practice of making active preparations for a possible catastrophic disaster or emergency, typically by stockpiling food, ammunition, and other supplies. Mm-hmm. And I would also add on to this that you could also do more long-term and thorough prepping through things like learning survival skills and building an off-the-grid home.
Or a bunker.
Mm-hmm. And just and I know an off-the-grid home sounds pretty
Instagram
much like you're
hipster.
Slumming it. It sounds hipster, did you say?
Yeah, it's got a bit of the sort of Instagram hipster, oh, we built this off-the-grid home in 6 months, look at this.
There are actually lots of videos of people on YouTube.
It's a whole genre.
Yeah. I am quite partial to watching them, though, but I just thought we'd have a quick look at some of them, if we could just scroll down and enjoy some of the nice homes. There we go. There's one in Arizona, so you can be off the grid and in style.
If you don't mind cleaning glass 20 times a day.
But yeah, there's also some other ones as well. You've got one in Norway there. That's a bit more
like
quaint. It looks a lot more like
natural
what
materials.
Imagine.
Yeah, no, big respect.
Just keep on scrolling if you want, John. That looks like a fire and rescue service tower to me.
It does, yes.
Like a mountain rescue even, that's what I meant to say.
Mm-hmm.
And
windows a bit too large.
Perhaps. Much nicer one there.
Oh, that's very
trendy.
Very nice.
But yeah, you get the basic idea. Let's have a look at the Scotland one before we disappear.
Oh no, it's too modern. I like the stonework, but again, this wide glass, I don't know, I think that large glass is only your friend when things are reasonably well together. Because if that gets broken, how are you going to replace a pane of glass on your own? You've got to board
it all
up.
Yes. But anyway, this isn't really the focus. It's just to show you that there is something to, you know, the long-term preparation. And especially if you have an off-the-grid home, obviously you're not dependent on the national grid, all these sorts of things. And therefore, you'll be better prepared. Although this is obviously probably one of the most extreme measures you could possibly take.
Of course.
However, when I talk about it, I don't want to discredit it. I'd actually quite like to do this. That one in Wales is lovely, isn't it?
That's
it looks
what
very,
you want. That's what
very
you want.
Hobbity.
Proper hobbit hole, yeah.
But yeah, I think this is just generally a good idea just because it's nice to do it. And if you can, I imagine it would be quite fun as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, moving on, why would you want to prep? What's the point in it? Well, one of the immediate things, even if you don't come across any disasters, any reason to do it, it brings peace of mind, which in and of itself is valuable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Knowing that you're prepared means that you can
be
less stressed about
why
potential.
You prep informs how you prep.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because it entirely depends what you're prepping for and what you're doing it, of course. Mm-hmm. And if the peace of mind, if there's a particular fear you have about a certain natural disaster, for example, then you're more likely to prepare for that eventuality, and that will give you more peace of mind.
Yeah, and of course, certain disasters you don't need to prep for, depending on where you are in the world. So I don't think you really need to prepare for a tsunami in Britain, to be honest.
Yeah.
We don't need
Or the Central African Republic.
Or there, yeah. imagine you don't need to prepare for volcanic eruptions either.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things you don't need to bear in mind. However, there are things that are universal as well. Of course, the most obvious point of all is that if you're prepared And things go wrong, then you stand a much better chance of surviving, which is obviously the entire point of doing it in the first place. And one point I also would like to raise is people might be incredulous about, okay, well, sure, it makes sense to be prepared, but are you really going to need to do that? I mean, no one's really had to rely on prepping in the past.
In a long time.
And I would kind of put back, well, do you have absolute confidence in your government and to run your country effectively? Mm-hmm. And I think most people would answer no. And then for some reason, people don't then follow up with, well, if I don't have absolute confidence in my government, then I'm also just not going to prep and I'm not going to prepare for the worst, when in reality, these two views seem inconsistent with one another.
And they are. And I think that's why a lot of people who are anti-government tend to be a little more highly strung, because they've put themselves in this state where they're worried about the future because they don't trust the government, but they haven't taken the concrete steps in order to establish peace of mind in case the bad things that they anticipate do actually happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think it makes the prospect of catastrophe a bit more tolerable. I mean, obviously, no one wants anything bad to happen. However, I think in being prepared for it, it makes living in the world pre-catastrophe a little bit easier, because you're not constantly on edge about your potential death and that of all your loved ones.
I think another reason people are wary of it is that they associate it as being an extreme thing to do, and they think there'd be some kind of kook or crank.
Mm-hmm. I think it has that association with, you know, your right-wing militias and stuff like that that tend to sometimes have quite fringe views, and they're kind of maligned in the media, although quite often I think unfairly, although I'm sure there are some that
deserve
it.
It's not just on the right though, is it?
You also get left-wing preppers, like a lot of environmentalists, for example, assume that because of the climate change, there's going to be mass food shortages, and therefore they're preparing for the worst.
And they also are more likely to go off and form communes and things like this, which is a form of prepping in a way.
And interestingly enough, I found that a lot of the bipartisanship of politics finds its kind of is removed from the prepping world. Like it doesn't really matter why you're prepping.
They're more focused on who you're going to vote for after a catastrophe, really, does it? Let's be honest.
I suppose so. But the idea is, though, that the principles are the same behind the prepping, and therefore you can get behind just learning these skills together rather than focusing on the reason why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You'd have someone just like, yes, the government's out to get me, the World Economic Forum's going to take over and seize my bank account and try and arrest
central bank
me.
Digital currencies on all of us.
And at the same time, they could be working with someone who's just like, climate change is coming to get me. Mm-hmm. And more or less, they're going to be doing the same things, and therefore they almost have an incentive to collaborate in a weird way. Although I don't know whether that's going to happen or not, obviously. Mm-hmm.
But there are some more just simple reasons to prep as well. Like, it's fun.
Yes. And this is why I enjoy it. This is why I have all of the stuff that I'm going to show you later. Mm-hmm. It's because I quite like particularly going camping a couple of days out in the wilderness where there's no one around. You stand on your own 2 feet properly. You're not dependent on society. And I enjoy it. It's nice to be around nature for a start. Learning the skills, being self-sufficient. You also learn a lot about how your ancestors lived. And I think there's a certain amount of that. People like Ray Mears, for example, he's very big into his survival stuff. And he's constantly bringing up, oh, our ancestors did this, our ancestors did that. This technique, I'm not sure if this was done, but it would be very useful for our ancestors.
So for anyone who's not aware, Ray Mears is, apart from a living legend, ex-SAS?
I think so, yeah.
Soldier who
I think
did
he
loads
trained the SAS for survival skills, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he's done loads of popular documentaries, a bit more back in the day, before Bear Grylls, just showing people how to survive in extreme environments and so on. He has an excellent attitude about things as well. Very calm, ordinary, practical.
He always talks about respecting the natural world and things like that, and venerating our ancestors' way of life a little bit.
At the risk of a pun, he's very down to earth.
Oh dear. And of course, John says he's also like the regular dude you meet at a pub. Very much so. Yeah, he's very much akin to the down to earth sort of point. Of course, being more independent as well is good for you psychologically. So there's lots of reasons, even if this prepping doesn't amount to anything, it will give you benefits that are tangible in other walks of life, which I think is worthwhile. Mm. So would you like to run us through some situations where it might be useful?
You put a segment saying, where would it be useful, and put a few things in. And I saw that section. I was like, well, there's also this, and there's also this, and there's also this. So there's just a long list of scenarios in which it might be useful to have prepped. Mm-hmm. So let's go through it. Natural disasters, supply line disruptions, collapsed economy. So things
topical.
Like hyperinflation, mm-hmm. panic buying, import shortages, things like that. A genuine apocalypse. So zombie apocalypse is, of course.
Oh, yeah. Very, very realistic and feasible.
Indeed. Can't mention apocalypse without zombie apocalypse. but there's also a super pandemic. So something like COVID, but much more virulent, something that genuinely destroys society. That mm-hmm. is a, you know, don't just because there's been this skepticism about COVID because of the virus itself, don't let that deceive you into thinking that there's no such thing as a more dangerous pandemic.
Like, I mean, there are lots of potential sources for this, like... I hear quite often about permafrost melting and releasing. I'm not sure about that, releasing like an old virus that we don't have an immunity for.
That's very real, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, we've got plenty of biological labs, mm-hmm. particularly in certain countries like...
Then there's also the there's also the fact that, you know, you could just explore space and find some alien virus, mm-hmm. which... is, you know, I know this is a little bit Hollywoody, but you could find some alien biological matter that's not even optimized to be a virus, but when brought into the human context, mm-hmm. it is effective against the structure of matter that we have here.
I mean, we do know that biological matter can survive on matter in space, because mm-hmm. we found, I'm not sure if it's right to call them meteorites, but I'm not... certainly no astrophysicist, but mm-hmm. basically bits of space rock with living stuff on. That's how I'm going to phrase it.
Yeah, but generally living stuff that we've put on them. I don't think we've found extraterrestrial life.
Oh, right. It's just that it can survive.
Yeah, that's why, for example, when we send out spacecrafts, they're mm-hmm. built in these extremely sterile clean room environments mm-hmm. To prevent them from essentially carrying bugs to Mars and infecting mm-hmm. Mars with our germs. Put it simply. but anyways, there's other apocalypses. A supervolcanic eruption, so Yellowstone is the one that's
that was
mentioned.
The one that I had in mind, yeah.
Enormous volcano in America.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't Yellowstone erupting cover the world in ash for about 3 days and drop the temperature and all sorts of wild stuff?
Yeah, it would create a volcanic winter almost certainly. And
that seems pretty sinister to me. And but it's still an active volcano as well.
Yeah, but a sizable asteroid impact could do the same. I mean, mm-hmm. you could have a dinosaur scenario where one thing they reckon might have happened was there was a big meteor impact, mm-hmm. which then caused a volcanic eruption because of the sheer seismic stress on the Earth's crust. Mm-hmm. So you had a double whammy. You had the big hit from the asteroid and the damage there, and then you also had the supervolcano and so on, which changed the climate and wiped out the dinosaurs, simply speaking. You could also have alien invasion as well. Let's not forget about that. In terms of war, you could have a different type of alien invasion, an illegal alien invasion, such as Ukraine is experiencing right now with large numbers of Russian immigrants and their various vehicles. You could have nuclear war. Mm-hmm. It's a big one that people often raise, especially during the Cold War. You could have civil war. In many countries, you could have people essentially fighting each other. And if war is raging across the land, it might be nice to nip down in your bunker with your mm-hmm. cans of food and sit it out.
I imagine people in Venezuela as well. I know we've already addressed the economic
famine,
side of things.
Yeah.
But I mean, this kind of stuff would have helped people in the real world. There are scenarios where
I think
it is useful.
I personally have a strong belief that it is morally irresponsible to not have a stockpile of food. Mm-hmm. Because that means if there is a disaster, suddenly you're joining the queue's panic buying and you are making the whole situation far worse. If everyone had kept 3 months' stockpile of tinned food, then if there were a real disaster, it would be a lot longer before it got really, really bad economically. We're a little too buy on demand, I think, in our mentality. Mm-hmm. And the final thing I have written here is social war, which is like civil war, but a lot more chaotic. It's more like gangs of different groups, say different religions, different races, different tribes, different
cartels
fighting each other just constantly. So think more like Russia in the 90s, or Rome had a social war back in ancient times, mm-hmm. or something like that. Mexico, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's my list of doom and gloom. But if you can think of anything else, definitely leave it in the comments, because mm-hmm. all of these scenarios kind of inform your prepping if you're trying to prepare for everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I'm kind of into this sort of thing. However, I haven't gone to some of the extent of, you know, some of the militias where they go out and do training exercises and things like that.
Yeah, that too much other people for me. I'm joking.
Talking of other people, where would you go if something happened? Well, if you lived in a city, you'd almost certainly want to move to a rural area. I know that much. Other humans would still likely be the most dangerous threat to your life, and I very much stand by that. I think I'm very certain that that would be the case.
I agree, but I would like to caveat that with that's certainly true, but I think that's only if the disaster is really serious or really long-lasting. In that, in those conditions, obviously, like a developed nation like Britain, which has a high population density, probably can't support with primitive agriculture 60, 70 million people. So that means that without the import structures, the population will drop to about 1 million. Mm-hmm. So that means 59 million people are going to die because of shortages by that logic. And that's disproportionately going to happen in the cities where people are all on top of each other. So that's my logic for that. But I think if a lot of the short-term disruptions, which prepping will benefit you for, you won't have to worry so much.
Sure. I think that's reasonable. Of course, even in the case of things like Hurricane Katrina, you had people robbing, looting, murdering even other people. So it still makes sense in a disaster scenario to keep a wide berth of people you don't
even
know.
Even in Ukraine, where the country is reasonably united, there have been lots of videos coming out about looters being sort of rounded up and tied to lampposts with a sign put on their back.
Quite often they pull their trousers down and poke their ass out as well, which is a little bit weird.
Yeah, but it's basically ritualized humiliation.
Yes.
To dissuade people from looting.
You've got a point here that you wrote. Obviously, strangers are more dangerous by far than the people you know. Mm-hmm. And you put it in brackets, except for John.
Yeah, for John Wong. I wouldn't trust him. But we've had this conversation. He wants to set up as a warlord, doesn't he, if this happens?
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.